he will talk about phase transition for bias van der Waals contrast correlation clusters.
Yeah, so this is joint work with my advisor Eval Peres from Berkeley and Nina Gantert from Germany. So the model is bias random walk on recollection clusters. So I start with defining recollection as just independent percolation with a high parameter P. And well, I might want to use the board. So and on this cluster we perform a biased random walk, so we have some parameter beta bigger than 1 and we walk to the right with probability proportional to beta and to every other probability proportional to 1, and provided we can go if the edge exists, and to be somehow precise we'd say that we condition on, so there is almost surely an infinite cluster when P is high enough. So we condition on the event that the origin is in the infinite cluster, and we start the walk there at the origin. So the motivation came, the original motivation came from the physics literature, where they talk about diffusion on this ordered lattice under external field, which translating from physics to mathematics is exactly what I said. And okay, so I'll state the results. So first of all, it's fairly easy, even if not completely trivial. It's that the walk is transient to the right.
What it means, transient?
Well, it just means that if you look at the x-coordinate, it goes to infinity with time, almost surely. It's pretty obvious, but it's not...
No, it's so it means that it is almost surely going to infinity to the right.
Exactly, yeah. And the other two results are that if beta is large, if the bias is big, then the speed of the walk is zero. Well, if the bias is small, then the speed of the walk is positive. So this is, at first glance, it looks surprising. You would assume that it should be the other way around. But I'll try to convince you that that's the way it works. So beta is the bias. So if I go back to this slide.
Maybe you should use the second one and just lift it whenever you have to.
Okay. So beta is the bias to the right. So if the bias, so the claim is if the bias is strong, then the walk has zero speed to the right. Well, if the bias is weak but still positive, this still bigger than one, then the speed has the walk has positive speed.
Either I don't understand, but it's contradicting intuition.
Right, it contradicts intuition.
It contradicts the.
If beta is large, it is by some reason don't work. Well, it should work, huh?
Yeah, and I'll give you the reason in a second.
What is P?
So P What I'm going to present, I'll need that p will be pretty close to 1. But
so
in fact...
You put short, because you put it so quickly that I already don't know what is p. You put short, absolutely short, but it was p.
Yes, it's
so,
p.
No,
right.
No, p... Yeah.
But it was in some case p, and it was immediately disappeared.
Yeah, so... p is here. This is the percolation we retain every edge with probability p, so independently of the other edges, and we walk on the infinite cluster
whatever
of the percolation.
Only whatever remains.
Exactly. So whatever remains, p is bigger than some critical value, a half in
and
the two-dimensional case.
From then some point you cannot move right, it doesn't belong to your cluster.
So if you cannot move, then if you cannot move, then you just ignore the edges that you can't move on, and still go proportional to the probability is proportional to the numbers written on the edges. So
you want out so, the clusters then?
No. So for example, if this edge is missing, I just don't use it, and I take one of these edges with equal probability. If this one misses, then I use one of these three proportional to them. No, no. I'll get to it at the end of what we don't know.
But if beta is large means if beta is bigger than 10,000, and if beta is small means if beta is smaller than 10 to the minus 10, or
it's bigger than 1. But yeah, so there are some bounds which are not the same. That if beta is bigger than 1 of them, then the speed is 0, and if beta is smaller than the smaller one, then the speed is
and it's large depending
positive.
On p, which was in the previous.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So from now, okay. So from now till the end of the talk, I'll assume that
okay.
p is a constant close to 1. Okay. So the zero speed for high values of beta is fairly easy. The thing is that the particle that performs the walk just gets stuck. So if we have this kind of a trap, so I assume that the black edges are open and the red ones are closed, then if this thing has depth n and the particle starts here, then it will just, due to the bias, it will probably move to the end and get stuck at the end and would wait a lot of time until it manages to go back and free itself from the trap. And now we should ask, what's the probability if we get to a new place? What's the probability this place is in a trap of length n? And this is exponential in n. And then, given that it is in a trap of length n, what is the what is the expected time? What is the expected value of the time it will stay in the trap? And this is again exponential in n with the, it's again something like beta to the power of n. And then, so by so if beta is big enough, then the expected time of getting stuck in a trap, not conditioning on its size, would be infinite, and this will yield the zero speed. So this is the case of high beta. For low beta, I want to prove positive speed. So what I need to show is basically that I don't get stuck in this kind of traps, but it becomes more complicated.
So yeah, what's about the transients in this case?
I will not prove the transients in this talk.
Because you might worry that there should be always transients.
Yeah, I might worry, but it does not happen. So maybe if I have time at the end, I'll talk about the transients. So first, we need to define some more general notion of traps, something more general than what we saw. So First, I'll define something that I call a good vertex. A good vertex is a vertex that has a path to infinity that walks one step to the right, then one step up or down. One step to the right, one step up or down, and so on. So every odd step is to the right, and every even step is up or down. So a vertex that has such a path to infinity is a good vertex. A bad...
It's just that there is such a path.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, there are also going to be bad paths, but if there is...
Yeah, if there is such an open path to infinity, then the vertex is good. A bad vertex is a vertex that is connected to infinity, belong to the infinite cluster, but is not good to have this kind of a path. And a trap is a connected component of bad vertices. So we have the definition of traps. And I'll probably want to leave this slide here because I'll use the definitions.
If your cluster never pinches down, then you're in trouble, right? Want your cluster to be wide enough,
doesn't
it?
Yeah.
I mean, up here, it's not clear to me. As I'm not connected to infinity or bad.
Well, if P is close enough to 1, it wouldn't happen. So, if P is close to the critical value, what you say is right. Then every vertex, there will be no good vertices. But if P is close enough, then most vertices will be good. So, it's a simple fact. So this is pretty much standard results from oriented percolation combined with the Liget-Shonman-Stacey domination theorem. That first, there are no infinite traps according to this definition. And second, if we look at a specific vertex and ask,
so wait, you mean there are no traps? Or
no infinite traps.
Oh, I see.
So there are no infinite traps, and if I look at the traps that include the origin or any other pre-specified vertex, then both one-dimensional projections of the trap would have their size would have exponentially decaying tail. So the probability that the length is bigger than something decays exponentially with this thing. So this is.
I know that you can't treat this case, but if P is strictly bigger than PC but not close to 1. What do you expect?
Well, actually, we do know how to prove the thing for... Basically, we do renormalization, and then we define a good vertex as something... Well, some renormalized definition of the same thing. So, now that we know what a trap is, we want to establish some facts about the walk itself. So the walk, we can consider the walk as a walk on an electrical network. So basically electrical network is a graph with weights on its edges. They're called conductances. And the walk on the electrical network is basically if you're on some vertex, you go the edge you choose an edge with probability proportional to the conductance of the edge. So this is so obviously the network given here gives the same law to the walk as the law that I described. So this is so I can view it as an electrical network, and since there are many theories about walks and electrical networks, we can get something. So the first claim is that if Z is a good vertex, then the probability of ever hitting the line which lies the distance t to its left decays exponentially. But now, the statement is true for every configuration such that Z is a good vertex. For every configuration such that Z is a good vertex, this probability decays exponentially. And
D is uniform in all configurations.
Yeah, D is uniform for all configurations. D depends on beta. We could write this in explicit formula for D as a function of beta. And why is that? So this is just, I compare the percolated lattice with the original lattice with no percolation on it. So we know that for both lattices, both the original lattice and the percolation lattice, the probability of ever hitting this line is the effective conductance. I don't want to define exactly what it means, but it's the effective conductance of the electrical network between Z and the line divided by the same thing and the effective conductance between Z and infinity. Now I do some simple comparison. So the for the percolation lattice, the effective conductance is monotone. So by erasing edges, I just decrease the effective conductance. So the effective conductance between Z and L in the percolation lattice is smaller than the one in the original lattice. On the other hand, the percolation lattice, the effective conductance in the percolation lattice is bounded from below by just the conductance of this good path, which could be calculated. So the effective conductance on the percolation lattice is at least it's bigger than the effective conductance in the original lattice times some constant, because the effective conductance on this path is some constant times the effective conductance on the original lattice. So as a result, we get that the probability on the percolation lattice of hitting L is no more than this constant D times the probability of hitting L in the original lattice. Of hitting L in the original lattice. It's just bias walk on D, which is, so this is how we get it. It's one thing, and another thing that we prove exactly the same way is that if we are in a good point Z and we condition on Z being, if we are in a good point, then the event, there is an event of going, first step just going to the right and then never coming back beyond the red dotted line. So going to the right and staying beyond this line, so the probability of this happening is bounded away from zero by some constant rho, which is again just a function of beta. And again, it's true for every configuration such that Z is a good vertex. And we call we call this event E prime. The event that this happened at the point Z at time N, we call it E prime of Z and N. And why E prime? Because there's actually an event E that we'll use. So our event E primes, event E prime always has a probability bigger than, well, but the probability of this event depends on the configuration. There could be better or worse configurations for this event. Excuse me?
N.
N is the time. I say, yeah. And so the, so since the probability depends on the configuration, we get that the configuration depends on the event E. So I want to produce some event which is independent of the percolation of the percolation configuration. So I define an event E of Z and N which is independent of the configuration, independent of the history, pretty much everything of everything, independent of everything we know, such that E has probability low. And if E happens, then so does E prime. So how can I construct such an event? This is pretty trivial, but I still show the slide. So the way to do it is to say we now construct a different probability space with the same behavior, and first we choose our event E. We decide whether E happens or not. So we choose the percolation configuration and E independent of each other, and E happens with probability rho. And then if E happened, we'll let the process continue according to its original law, given that A prime happened, given not coming back. If it does not happen, then we play with it a little bit. But again, we can, with the right probability, we make the process run according to E prime, and with some other probability, we'll let it run according to not E prime. And doing this thing, we get the event E, which yields the event E prime and is independent of pretty much everything. So maybe one remark. I said that this E is independent of everything. It's, in fact, it's not independent of other E's. We have this E for every Z and every N. If E did not happen in the past, it has some influence on E not happening in the future. So,
even just for E.
Oh, I just did. But I probably didn't do it clearly enough. So we have E prime is just an artificial event. Yeah, it's just an artificial coin flip external to the space. But what I do, instead of just creating the random walk, I create the event E, and then according to the event E, I build a random walk. So
E is nothing like either.
Excuse me?
E is nothing like either.
Like?
No, it's not at all similar to E prime.
E is used for E. E prime contains E. But okay, so now that we have this event E, so maybe I'll say what I gain. So what I gain is that somehow I have an event of known probability such that if this event happens, then I cross this line in order never to come back. And it's independent of the configuration. So what happens beyond this red line is just an ordinary percolation configuration. conditioned on this point being good, and not so this is something that I'm able to work with in ordinary progression configuration, unlike something conditioned on this event E prime happening. So I'll define
coin
flips. So I'll define the term renewal. So we say that a renewal occurs at time n if at time n we're at the frontier. Frontier is not a good word for this thing. What I mean by the frontier, I mean that we're as advanced in the x-axis as we've ever been. Second, at time n we're in a good point. So this is an event that refers to the part of the space that we haven't seen. And third, the event E occurs at time n. So time n will have this event that would make us cross the line and never come back. So I have a picture of renewal, so I just drew the random walk, and here the renewal occurred, and here, and I'm thinking that between two successive renewals, we did some distance to the right. So if the expected value, if the expected value of the time between successive renewals is finite, then the speed of the walk has to be positive.
What makes the intermediate points in between the first and second one not renewal points?
Okay, so I don't know. Just looking at the trajectory doesn't give enough information. But for example, it's possible that here the event E prime happened, so we crossed, but the event E did not happen. Or here it's not a good point. There could be a cut point. There could be cut points which are not good points. So not every cut point is a renewal point.
But you can't see that just by looking.
But you cannot see it just by looking at the path, or you. You can see some of it, but not everything. So I think that on purpose I choose this not to be a renewal, just to make the to make the point that not every cut point is a renewal. But what I want to show is that the expected time between successive renewals is finite. So if I take R to be the time between successive renewals, all I want to show is that the sum n goes from 1 to infinity of the probability of R bigger than n is finite. That's just the expected value. So now I assume that the renewal occurred, and I start trying to estimate the time until another renewal will occur. So after a renewal, the scenery to the right, that's the arrow means the scenery to the right, is an ordinary percolation scenery conditioned on Z being a good vertex. The scenery to the left, we know a lot about it and it's complicated. But the scenery to the right is the only thing that's interesting, and this scenery is simple. So I take n large and I want to estimate the probability that R is bigger than n. So step one, so I denote by xn, xn is the time since the last renewal, and xn would be the distance to the right since the last renewal. So I first claim is that if beta is small enough, then this xn has some power law behavior. That is, the probability that xn is no more than square root of n is no more than n to the power of minus 2. And maybe you wonder where what the influence of beta is on this equation. So beta enters here. The bigger beta is, the lower this number is. So for a bigger, so, and we need this number, we'll see, we need this number to be, we need this thing to sum up. So we need beta to be small enough that this would be smaller than minus one. So
two depends on beta.
So the two here,
exactly,
exactly. And that's why it doesn't work for big beta. So why? Why is that? Why is the? Maybe I'll put this slide here. So why is this? Does this equation hold? So at time n, we cannot go beyond. At time n, we can't leave box of side length n or 2n or something like that. And so we can get an estimate on how big can traps be inside this box. So the biggest trap, so again, with probability 1 minus 1 over n squared, the biggest trap would be no more than some alpha times log. That's the exponential tail bound that we had at the beginning. And now, how much time does the particle spend in a trap? So typically, the particle would spend time which is...
Oh, maybe you could tilt the mirror up this way, ever so slightly.
Yeah, so the time that the particle spends in a trap is just exponential in the depth of the trap, and the beta determines the exponent. So, or some function of beta times the depth of the trap. So, if beta is small enough, then it won't spend more than n to the third time in each trap. So, how do I roll this up? Always within this box, and there are all these traps, and I will not spend more than n to the power of third time in a trap. So at any given time, if I wait, so after, say, n to the third, or some constant time, n to the third, doesn't matter. After n to the third time, sorry, no more than n to the third time, we'll be at a good point. Oh, we're... So we wait some not so long, n to the third time, and we hit some good point. Now that we're at the good point, there's some chance, pretty small, but some chance that we'll now walk a million steps on the good path. A million is a constant, depending on beta, not depending on n. So we have some probability of just walking for a million steps on the good path. And then being in a good point. And then we continue walking, I don't know, back forth. For some time we again hit a good point, walk a million steps on the good path, and find ourselves here. So eventually, so this will happen. So this thing, the million step thing, happens something like so times. So how much do I, so what do I gain? I have this million or half a million, because only half the steps were to the right, so half a million times this n to the 2/3. And the one thing that I ignored is between the end here and the beginning here, I might gain something, I might lose something, but I won't lose too much. Why? Because at this point I'm in a good point at the end of the million steps, and at a good point I just can't bounce back too much. So the distance between here and here, the distance to the left is dominated by something exponential. So it's this thing minus the expectation of the bouncing back, which I can bound. It's some function of beta. So minus, I'll just write some constant d1. And if the number in the position of a million here is big enough, this is a constant. So if I choose a number big enough here, then this thing would be big. And this is bigger to, it's bigger than square root of n. And yeah, so if we want to, so if we want to estimate the probability here, then we have n to the minus 2 of the traps for the trap structure, and some large deviation estimate here. So this holds. So now to continue, I need some fairly simple mixing properties. So we said that the event E does not depend on anything except for other E's, except for the event E in other times and other places. So, but it doesn't depend on them too much. So we have a mixing property saying that if I know whether the event E happened in anywhere left to the green line, then I don't ask about the event E between the green line and the point Z, then this doesn't give me much information on whether Z happened or not. So I don't want to give the full statement of the lemma, but if you state it right, then it's easy to prove and good enough for our purposes. So we have a mixing property for the event E, and at the same time we have a mixing property for the question whether Z is good or not. Again, the question of whether Z is good is obviously depend on the question on whether some vertex here is good, because Z might be on the only path, on the only open path from this point to infinity, the only open directed path. So there is some dependence, but it's not major. So there's some mixing property for the vertex being good. And this is enough. So again, we wanted to estimate the probability that R, the time between renewals, is bigger than some number n. So we run the process for time n. And then we draw this green line every log n. And then for each green line, the first time we cross it, we're at the frontier, because it's the first time we crossed this line. And then all we need the point to be, remember the definition of a renewal, we need the point to be good, and we need the event E to happen. But if we ask it only distances log n from each other, then the counter pretty much starts from zero. So the questions here are almost independent of everything we already asked. So at each point here, it might happen with some positive probability. And since we know it goes pretty far, it goes at least square root of n, then we have many different points to ask. So it's got to happen at some point. So we have a renewal somewhere here. And again, estimating probability is simple, and we get that the thing converges. So this proved the result. And now, maybe I'll say something that I didn't prove. So the same thing holds. I just proved it for a large value of P, but it actually holds for every supercritical P. It probably holds for every dimension. We proved it for two dimensions, but there's nothing strictly two-dimensional in the proof. So I'm sure that when we check the details, we can actually announce it's true for every dimension. One more thing, maybe the almost sure existence of a speed, a priori not clear, but again, the speed exists. So it's a function of P and beta. And then directions for future research that at least I find interesting. So all of them are some sort of monotonicity issues. So first, there's the uniqueness of the cutoff, which Vlada asked. So to prove that we proved that for small enough value of beta, the speed is positive. For high enough, it's zero. Obviously, there's some unique cutoff, and it doesn't go zero positive, zero positive, zero positive, but needs to be proved. Then a question that somehow claimed that is stronger than the unique cutoff claim is that it's unimodality for the speed as a function of beta for P. So that there's one local maximum, which is the global maximum, and as we go to zero, the speed decreases, and as we go to infinity, the speed decreases and hits zero at some point. So I want to prove that. And the third one is that for the third monotonicity issue is that we conjecture that for the fixed value of beta, if we now increase P from the critical value all the way to 1, then the speed is monotone in P. So we can show again that for every beta, for high enough P, it's positive, for small enough P, it's 0. It's exactly the same thing, the same proof that you saw. But to prove that it's actually monotone is harder. So we didn't work awfully lot on this question. So it might be that just one of you can come up to me at lunch or something. But these are our directions for future research. Oh, thank you.
Any questions? If not, then we have a break for half an hour.